Three, two, one. Hello and welcome to episode 79 of Ruse Radio. We just missed what could have been a monumental alignment of the stars. Can you tell the people about what you just told me right before we started here? What's 76?
Oh, the 76. We almost were at episode 76, and that would have worked out nice because I'm the Scorpion Dragon 76, which I'm referring to as my third solo album, the Scorpion Dragon 76, which is basically my alter ego, my superhero alter ego, burning up MCs, transforming into the Scorpion Dragon. You know, that's how we do it. And that name came from my, I was born in 1976. It's all about my origins. And then my horoscope sign, you know, born the year of the dragon.
So I think you talked about that on the last podcast.
The Scorpio horoscope, you know, with the birthday, the year of the dragon, it all comes together. The Scorpion Dragon 76.
You know, if you look behind you right there above your head, you're one of the two stickers that's in this room.
Nice.
Yeah, I don't know why I stopped at two. It just felt right. The circle and the square, and I left it there. I don't know why. But you're the circle, buddy. It's Gaza, black vinyl. And black vinyl was what you had made right when you had gotten here the last time.
No doubt.
So what is it that you're working on now?
Basically, I'm still like touring, supporting the black vinyl album, and then I'm working on an instrument. Album right now, what I'm really excited about. It's gonna be really dope, man. I'm just gonna hit them with a bunch of dope, grimy, boom bap, hip hop beats to vibe to, you know, and just give something people to zone out to and think about life and everything. And I'm gonna add some dope DJ scratching in there, and it's really gonna be something dope and, you know, something that is gonna be a tribute to the Flint area. That's kind of my whole concept behind the instrumental album I'm working on. And I also got some projects with some other cats. My boy Josie Wales and me did an album over the last couple of years as our group Born Lethal. And the album's called Back from the Labyrinth. I'm pretty excited about that. We got Dice from Detroit, you know, Detroit Legends on the album. We got DJ Virus on that album doing some cuts. Philosophy Cole's on there. We got a bunch of dope MCs. My man DJ Fish is on there dropping some cuts too. So Back from the Labyrinth will be dropping soon. We're just in the mixing stage now on that album. And then I got a project with this cat from Detroit, Origix, called OG for Origix in Gaza. And I supplied all the beats. He did a lot of rhyming on it, got some guest MCs on there. I dropped a couple verses on there. We got a dope collab with Project Born, a dope collab with this group out of Detroit, Bad Influence, which is my boy Swigs and Benny Bars. Some real dope hip hop. You know, it's kind of Detroit meets Flint, you know, stirring it up. And, you know, that little bit of Motown, a little bit of Flint Town.
It's how many dope. People are working on it?
It's basically me and Origix doing a lot of the work. I did all the beats, like I said. He, you know, arranged all the recording and stuff. He hooked up with our boy Tone down in, he's right down in the Detroit area. They do all the recording there, so he's the engineer and everything. And then we got Bad Influence, you know, as a group doing a collabo. We got Project Born doing a collabo. My man Dagda from Detroit's on there doing a dope collabo track with us. You know, a bunch of dope MCs. And it's a pretty dope project, man. So OG's coming up, Born Lethal, my instrumental album. I'm touring right now with this group, Rob Banks Organization, which is a dope kind of like experimental, electric, hip-hop, funk, soul, weird, you know what I'm saying, a little bit of everything. And I'm basically DJing for them, and I've been rocking a couple of my shows in the middle of their set with them backing me up, man, which is pretty dope.
How'd you get to work with them? How'd that happen?
Basically, the lead guy is the O-Man, a.k.a. Brian Orr from Flint Town, and I've known him for years. He had a group called Lack of Afro that was a funk band.
Great
name, for sure. And they had a funk band and plus a hip-hop group, so he did like a little bit of rap and a little bit of funk, but they used to play downtown all the time at the spot that was called the Back Room, which is now Rodney's Loft. It used to be the Back Room, and LOA would play there all the time, and they released a cassette tape. And so, you know, I kind of got wind to him years ago, and then I would do some kind of collabo shows with them down at the Back Room. I'd get up and rock with their band and stuff, and we kept in touch all these years. And just from being on the internet, you know, I think he caught wind of me DJing. He had me come out of his place to work, the Genesee County Compassion Club over there on Genesee Street. And I had me DJ a Halloween party, I think, was the first time we collaborated on some stuff. And I did a couple other DJ gigs. He put together his Rob Banks organization group, which is basically him playing like keyboard, putting together dope production. We got our boy Troy playing live bass. We got our girl Rose singing on it. You know, and other cats collab on it too. DJ Bullfrog jumps in, lays some cuts here and there. But I've been dropping some cuts. And basically, after he got that group together, he asked me to open up one of their shows. So I DJed for an hour, did my thing, rocked the crowd. And after that, they asked me to step in for DJ Bullfrog and start DJing, you know, for kind of, you know, taking his place while he's on hiatus. And it's been going great, man. Like I said, they learned a couple of my songs. Now I drop a couple of my solo songs in the middle of their set with them backing me up, man, dropping the live bass and keys and dope, you know, backing vocals. My old man, my boy, the old man's dropping some dope, you know, hype track, you know, ad libs behind me and stuff. And basically it's going great, man. And it's going so good that I did a show at the Pike Room, my man Kovacs' album release party down in Pontiac. And I had them back me up. And it went really good, man. It was their first time doing a straight hip-hop show. So it was kind of cool bringing them over to the other side. And they really appreciate it, man. There's a bunch of dope groups down there and stuff. Stony Ocean from Flint was down there. A bunch of dope cats.
Pike Room?
The Pike Room, which is basically upstairs of the Crowfoot, which is a pretty famous concert venue out of Pontiac. Actually, Joe Perry of Aerosmith was doing a solo show downstairs in the Crowfoot the night that we rocked the Pike Room upstairs. Ain't that crazy?
That is crazy.
We got there, there's like a line around the block, and it's like, you know, a bunch of older white people and shit. We're like, this ain't for the hip-hop show.
Right.
And when we're walking up, man, we're walking up with gear, you know, we're carrying a bass, amps and everything, and the people were just like looking at us, and we walked right in, man, walked right past the crowd and right upstairs to our sound check and shit. And it was a dope show, man. The sound down there, the sound guy killed it. It was amazing, man. A really cool venue. Big shouts out to my man Kovacs. It was this complex release party, and DJ Los was down there. He DJed with us that night and was dropping some real dope cuts, man. And if you don't know about DJ Los, he's a Detroit legend, man. He's one of the, you know, first premier DJs out of Detroit. You know, DJ Los and Easy B, that was his original group. And through his label, they put on cats like Dice. And, you know, he's collabed with, you know, Awesome Dre and all them Detroit legends. So it was cool rocking with DJ Los for sure.
So how much would you say collaboration has played into your art, your career as an artist?
It's definitely been important, man, because, you know, I came from groups. I originally started in a group, which was my original group, was B Gaza and the DLP, which is basically me with a DJ and a hype guy and a couple other hype guys that would come in and rap every once in a while. From that, we became the DLP, and after that, we became the Juggernaut when the DLP hooked up with another group called Triple Chaos out of Flint. Which is three dope MCs. Rest in peace to my man, Tim Colton. He recently passed away, one of the members of that group. But it was basically two of the MCs from Triple Chaos, Brainstorm and D-Madness. He goes by Davey Devastator now. But them and their other partner, B-Mood, who was down with their crew, they kind of came in and hooked up with us, which was basically me, our DJ Fish, and then my boy Jackpot, a.k.a. Too Young at the time. There's so many names, man. It's crazy. That's hip-hop for you, though. You know, so we became the Chaotic Prophets at first, and shortly after that, we became the Juggernaut in 1995, right? And we put out a cassette single, man, and it was pretty sharp. It looked like a pack of Marlboros and shit. And we sold so many of those tapes, man. It was just dope, and it really got a lot of good reviews. We did some really good shows. We played down in Detroit. You know, we toured as the Juggernaut and went really good, man. And it was basically, you know, a big collaboration of dope MCs and minds. We go in the studio with, like, you know, six cats coming up with beats. It was too good to be true. He had to bounce eventually.
Yeah, yeah.
He chilled as long as he could, everybody.
For the audio listeners, Oscar has left the room.
Oscar is out.
So, all right. Sorry to interrupt your story. No, continue, no please, yeah. My friend.
So the Juggernaut was the crew, man, and it was basically a big, huge collaboration of minds. We go in the studio. Everybody had their own concepts and lyrics and ideas, and we made some really good stuff, man. But having a group that big is, like, impossible to organize and keep together, especially when you're underground MCs and there's not a lot of money going around, you know. So eventually it went down to back to a duo, and it was me and my partner Jackpot, and we became the Artful Dodgers in 1997, and that was a collabo for years, man. I mean, I was a part of a duo. We did everything together, you know. We dropped the tracks together. We'd back each other up on the songs, you know. We'd do the choruses together, you know. We'd tour all the time. It was constantly like having, you know, a real partner in the game, and that lasted, you know, from like 97 to about 2010, the Artful Dodgers lasted. We put out 4 albums over the years. We put out the Dusted World EP in 97. 99, we put out the Lazy Eyes LP. Second Wind LP, we put out in 2003, which won DetroitRap.com's Album of the Year Award, which was amazing. We could talk about that later if you want, because that was a pretty cool experience. After that, we did the Off the Credenza album in 2008, and then shortly after that, Jackpot kind of went on hiatus, and I went full solo in 2010 with my first album, Here Comes Trouble. And then after that, you know, I was definitely influenced by the collabos, but I became a solo artist, and kind of took on the roles of doing everything, even making my own beats, and, you know, I'm basically my own manager, my own designer, all that stuff. And it's a lot of work, man, but I love it. It's my passion. I'm an MC, I'm a rapper, producer, creative writer, you know, for life. It's who I am.
Yeah. A jack of all trades.
A jack of all trades, yeah. Tried to be for sure, man. The triple threat is what I call it. The MC, producer, DJ.
Ooh.
For hip hop. I can sing, rap, dance all in one show.
Yeah, I mean, I like to think of it too, is the more you know, the more you know. In the sense that, like, if you're learning one particular trade, it usually feeds into the other one in these interesting ways. Like, I'm so glad that I know about mixing and mastering because I can write my music with that in mind. You know, I know exactly how I can make this sound.
That's
true. I know actually what I can do with this.
You can visualize the future finished product and stuff. That's cool, man.
Stuff like that. Yeah. I mean, or music videos. If you are familiar with how making a music video works, like if you've filmed your own music videos before, even if you're going to a shoot, now you know how to get what you're looking for because you know how filming a music video works. It's not like you're the rapper that walks in that's just expecting the guy behind the camera to do everything and you don't know a thing. Like, just knowing what's going on helps so much. And just being able to connect the dots with a lot of things helps so much.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so I encourage any type of learning about anything just for those reasons because you never know what you're going to learn in between
That's true. The art of MCing with me too was, you know, a big part of collaborating. I feel like got me to where I am today, you know, made me more of an expert, and my songwriting and my freestyle are, you know, really tight now, and that's from years of experience of writing songs, recording songs, and a lot of these collaborations. Collaborated with some of the best MCs, my man Juice from Chicago, where you're about to go, man. You should definitely research my man Juice. Dope freestyle MC, one of the greatest, man. He's famous for serving Eminem and Scribble Jam MC Battle in 97. It's actually a footage out there. You can check that out on YouTube. You know, search Scribble Jam 97. You can see my man Juice battling Eminem, and he beats him. You know, it's pretty dope. And I basically did a couple songs with him, and we did a couple songs, and plus I just hung out with him a lot and got in the freestyle cypher. And freestyling with him made me step up my freestyle game, like, huge, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Hanging out with him, you know, trying to, you know, stay in the same cypher and keep it going after him, the same energy. And I basically, you know, I stepped up to the occasion, man, and rocked it with the best, you know, cats like him. And I got to give big shouts out to my man, Boy Wonder, who is a Flint MC who I freestyled a lot with early on, and he really made me step my game up, man. Collaborating with him on the freestyle level was, like, incredible. He made me step my game up. Real dope MC. And I can say the same thing for them Triple Chaos cats, Brainstorm and D Madness. These guys were incredible freestyle MCs. And, you know, hanging out with them and freestyle cypher with them, man, really made me step my game up. Because when we first hung out, none of us freestyled. My crew, we would be in the cypher with these cats freestyling, but we'd kick all our written raps, and we just had tons of them. We had these, even beyond the songs we had written, we just had tons of verses, so we could just keep going and going. But after I saw, you know, cats like freestyling and talking about shit in front of them and people's clothes and references, and this is amazing, man. And, you know, then I started doing it, and I love it, man. I mean, I've been in MC battles before, and I've, you know, crushed cats, and it's just really awesome feeling, you know what I'm saying? It really is like a sport, and I kind of miss those days, man. But I've freestyled with a lot of cats, always freestyle at shows, and then, you know, freestyle helps you write. I do these studio on the go classes with my man Farline Randall, and we basically, it's an after school program. We go into the schools and we help the kids, you know, make their own songs, writing lyrics, making beats, everything. And the kids would be like, I want to just freestyle my stuff. And I'm like, just write it. I'm like, and when you're writing it, get your first line down and then freestyle. You know what I'm saying? That's basically how you write something is, you know, you go through what you have and then you freestyle to get the next couple bars you like or whatever. And you can keep trying that, man. And I always thought that was like a good concept to show somebody, you know, freestyle writing are hand in hand. You're still using the mind. You're still coming up with lyrics and stuff. But I mean, I love writing lyrics. I'm pen and pad all day. I get lost in it. You know, I've been doing that since I'm a teenager, man. It's a passion for me. And I still write lyrics every day. I started when I was a kid. I wrote my first rap in 1987 when I was 11 years old, man, about my mom. It was like a class product, you know, a class project. It was really dope. And then, so there's a log of me doing these writings and everything. And it's like, I've always been into poetry and songwriting. And it's basically a huge passion of mine. And, I see a lot of cats nowadays, they'll, you know, want to do it the Jay-Z way and not want to write their lyrics down or whatever, which is cool, but I'm always going to write it down, man, because, like, the writing's part of it to me, you know? Yeah. It's like I love freestyling, too, and I could freestyle a verse if I wanted to, but I like to write it and analyze it, you know, break it down and adjust things and perfect it, sharpen it up, you know?
Okay, so the reason I don't like to write it down is because I like to adjust things. And you know what's funny is I rarely do. Like, most of the time, I leave it the way I wrote it the first time. Almost every time, I swear. I'm not even just saying this. Yeah. I swear.
That's cool.
But it's just because, like, I don't have a reason to, but I'm just playing it safe. So I'm thinking, what if I do edit it? Well, I better write it on my note on my phone so I don't write it in a pen and then have to scribble over some lyrics.
I mean, that's basically the same thing, I guess. You know, if you're typing it out on your phone, you're still writing it and analyzing it. You know what?
I shout out Jemmy Haysman. He was on the podcast, and he said it on here, and it kind of made me realize, because he was saying he doesn't like typing on his phone his lyrics. That's...
Yeah, I can't do it either.
He hates writing his lyrics. It just feels like it's a bad way to translate.
It's unnatural to me. Yeah, it's
unnatural. But typing on a computer, he can do, is what he said.
Oh, okay.
And you know, it's funny.
On the keyboard, it'd be easier.
I've experienced the same thing because I've written a lot of songs on the computer we're recording this podcast on right now. There's been so many times where I want to use those studio monitors. Yeah. So it just was practical. I was like, oh, I'll just pull up the Word thing on here. Yeah. But it feels great because I can... You know, just type it right in.
I dig
that. As soon as it pops into my brain, it feels so much better than typing on your phone.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, I guess, you could compare it to something mechanical such as a typewriter, right?
Yeah, I
mean, it's not far from that.
Yeah.
So there, I would suggest trying a keyboard, my friend.
Yeah.
You might like it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm good on the keyboard anyway, you know, because I was raised, you know, rocking the keyboard. So.
My mom blows my mind with how fast she can type. Like, when I was, I don't know if it's actually as fast as I remember, because when I was a kid, you know, you have those memories from when you're a kid and things are crazy. But my mom, she typed like Sonic, dude. I was watching her like, whoa.
Her typing game was strong.
Yeah, she could be at a court being that person. Keeping track
the stenographer.
Stenographer,
Yeah, they got to be quick.
They do. I wonder what the actual word per minute minimum is for that job. I would guess 300 words per minute, right?
Oh, yeah. Something like that. Yeah, yeah.
People don't talk faster than that.
No.
That's like Eminem rap god right there.
They're probably like sitting around waiting for somebody to talk fast so they can like get a little, you know.
Yeah, a little action.
A little challenge, a little action.
Yeah, these people are like super typers. I forget about this. Like, we're regular typing people. Have you ever went on those websites where you can actually race your typing? They have those.
No, that's
cool. They're free, yeah. I think they have paid options, and I can't even remember what they're for, but they're like racing websites. Some of them even have graphics, so it like shows cars and like, you know, different things to represent who's winning the race, and it's just it's against a bunch of strangers, and it's always different little paragraphs.
That's crazy,
some are harder
man.
Than others, but it's a good way to get better at typing too.
Yeah, yeah.
I think my average, I want to say, I haven't done it in a while, so I'm probably wrong, but I think it's like 80, 75.
Nice.
That might be an exaggeration, though. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure what mine is. I'll have to test it someday, but I'm sure I'm pretty good, man. I learned on a typewriter back in the day, and You know, it's just natural. I don't even got to look at my fingers anymore, you know.
I just lied. It's probably more like 60, 65. I was thinking nice. About it more and more. You're probably faster than me, man. I'm telling you. Especially yeah. if you learned it early on.
I really early on, man. Back in high school. Yeah, it's true.
Typing's an art in itself. It's another one of those arts.
Yeah. I've noticed in life, man, there's kind of like a following and like kind of a nerd cult for everything in life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Kind of like the Comic-Cons for the comic book people. There's like that. There's something for everything. There's a gun and knife show for them guys. You know, there's a car show. There's a fucking clothing show, a sneaker show. There's like there's people nerding out about something in everything in life. You know?
Yeah, like it runs as deep as you want to look, right?
Kind of like super fans and like sports, you know what I'm saying? It's kind of the same thing. They nerd out over their teams.
And yeah, to the
they're
point
keeping
that,
track of their stats. And
yo, when I hear Bill Burr talking about sports even, like if anybody's familiar with Bill Burr, as soon as he brings up sports, I don't understand a thing, but is so into it. Oh my God.
He seems like that type of guy. He's from like Jersey or something, right?
Yeah, I just can't follow. Like, I get the emotions. I can feel that, but I don't know what the fuck he's talking. And it's always like whatever happened that last Thursday that he's, you know.
You know, I like to go see a game in person. That's the best way to experience it, you know. It's like a festive atmosphere, you know. It's really cool that way. But, like, watching it on TV a lot of times, like, stuff like baseball or hockey, I can't watch it.
If I was – but this is the thing. Like I said, I understand his emotion. Like, if you were emotionally wrapped into a certain team, I get it. Then you would care if they lost that night.
Yeah,
or how people are talking about them and what they're saying about – the guy that you think got too many points, and like you're wrapped deep into the lore of this team.
Yeah,
like you have an opinion about each of those players.
Yeah,
so
true.
Like there's people out there who that's their whole life, and I get it, man. Because like we're saying, everything runs as deep as you want to look. Like it made me think about these, even these Levi's right here. These are like some very very basic flip flops I'm wearing.
Yep.
I wonder. I think Gucci's got flip flops at least that are like $800. I wonder what are expensive flip-flops, because there's got to be quality flip-flops.
There's probably a flip-flop convention going on somewhere right now.
Yeah, flip-flop convention.
You know what I mean? With the most expensive, you know, designer flip-flops ever and shit.
I believe it, man. I believe it. I like hats a lot. I can get deep into hats. I feel like that's one of the things I haven't gotten as deep into as I'm going to get to, you know?
I'm really big in hats too, man. I got a huge collection of caps.
Ooh.
And, you know, you get different colors to rock with different outfits. And it's been my style since I was a kid, man. You look at these old photos of me when I'm just a super little kid and I'm rocking caps, man. It's just always been my style. And my dad rocks the cap, you know? It's like in our family.
You're so ahead of me. Wow. So, okay. Tell me about what is your method for your hats now? Like, where do you keep all these things? Do you have an organization? Like, do you keep them on a cabinet or?
Basically, the top shelf of a closet.
Okay.
I got them all kind of like lined up and kind of, you know, on top of each other. And
how many hats would you say you have?
Quite a few, man. Quite a few.
Over 100?
No, not that many. Okay. I'd say closer to probably like 30.
That's still a lot.
It's pretty, it's a lot. Yeah. You know, I've got one head.
It's a mountain.
but I like to have them for different outfits and stuff. And, man, that's always been my style, you know, different caps, you know, rocking the fucking, you know, different styles. I'm going to rock a fedora sometimes when I'm doing, like, you know, kind of a, you know, more upper scale event or something, you know what I'm saying, or classy event or something. I rock the fedora even.
Yeah, you know. I have a fedora, but I bent it, and you have to like reshape those after you bend them, right?
Speaking of that, no diss to your bill, all
right,
but I'm from the era that I bend my bill.
With my this hat's the only bill I have like this. I'm
a lot of people got just a straight bill now. They don't bend it. And I'm from the era where we would bend the bill, and I'm comfortable that way.
So you're saying when you get it, whatever hat,
out like this, yeah.
Oh, you would bend this?
We'd bend this to be like this.
Oh, no. That would defile this hat.
But that's what we would do, man. I'm from the era. That's why my bills are always bent like that.
I actually like the way the bent bill looks.
Brim.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Let me ask you then. When I regularly see a bent bill, is that usually what's happening there? Or
either it came that way or somebody bent it.
How often would it be that somebody bent it? Because a lot of hats have bent bills, right?
Yeah.
When you buy them.
Well, nowadays, I see a lot of the straight bills that's kind of taken over now, I think.
So, yeah. So, if you see somebody with a bent bill, it's actually pretty likely they bent that bill themselves.
Yeah, because that's definitely what we do back in the day, man. We'd always bend the bill.
There's a few people that's popping into my mind that like that do bend their bills. So yeah. I've seen it. And I didn't know they were doing that. I didn't know the old school way to... Yeah. See, I just couldn't with this hat. There's a couple hats, maybe.
I agree, though, with that statement, too. There's some hats you can't.
Yeah.
They just kind of look better with the straight bill and the way they're built.
Well, like, this hat is the first hat I ever bought that, like...
I like that hat, by the way. Windy City, Chicago.
Thank you. I only buy a Chicago hat if it actually looks good. I don't want, like, a touristy hat. I want a hat that looks cool but also says Chicago on it.
Exactly.
So...
You succeeded.
Thank you. I got it in Chinatown.
Oh, nice.
Just a random little shop.
Very cool. I've been to Chinatown,
Chinatown's nice, especially if you're into some Chinese food.
Yeah, man.
Ooh, I've gotten some delicious stuff. Also, I've learned that Chinese spicy is spicier than American spicy. Just warning you, all right?
Okay.
If you order something, you order their spicy version of whatever it is that was spicier than the normal version. It's not like an American restaurant where you're like, oh, that's a little spicy. It's got a kick to it. No, it's like you wake up the next day and you feel pain type of spicy.
Damn.
I'm warning people. I've been through this a couple times
now.
They
take it to another level.
Like my body's not ready for Chinese spicy. I'm an American, okay? I'm not adapted.
Right.
So, but this hat that I got in Chinatown.
That's great.
The bill. It, like, faces up. Like, most of my bills I can see. And this bill I can't even, like, it's at the tip of my vision. Like, it's actually kind of, like, up. And so I have to wear the hat the right way, too. I've noticed, like, I'll have to kind of pull it down, like, right over my eyebrows. It's an interesting hat. I haven't had a hat with this shape yet. That's what I'm getting at.
I find it interesting that you're going to Chicago, man, because I love that city, man.
Tell me about your love for the city.
Wow. Our old manager, a good friend of mine, friend since we were, like, I think first grade type of stuff, you know what I mean? Jim Woodward, a.k.a. Jay Woody. Big shouts out to Woody. Basically, he went to Columbia University down there, and he was the manager of Artful Dodgers. He really believed in us. He always rolled with us. You know what I'm saying? He really was pushing for us, promoting us. And since he was going to school down there, he got in touch with a bunch of dope DJs and MCs from the area, basically these, like, elite Chicago MCs, man, that were kind of running stuff, and he got us down with them. He basically got us to meet them, and through our cat, Risky Business, who I'd already been in touch with. This is crazy, man. This guy got my number from the back of the Juggernaut tape or the Artful Dodgers tape, and he had called me at my parents' house back in the day, a cat from Chicago, Risky Business. We became friends over the phone. Isn't that crazy? He's called me one day, and, you know, he'd send me mixes and stuff, and we became friends. So when we went down there through him, we met MC Juice, who I was talking about earlier, O-Type Star, Mike One, Metamo from a group called Rubber Room, Pugsley Adams, Optimus Prime, you know what I'm saying? All these dope Chicago MCs, Novocaine, you know, he basically got us into the same room with them, and when they saw us step up with our passion and our skill, they treated us like brothers, man. It was just total acceptance. And, you know, big proof of that is you watch the Artful Dodgers One Mic Then Pass music video. We got all them Chicago MCs in the video. The whole concept of this video is we're passing a briefcase kind of mysteriously MC to MC throughout this entire video in different scenarios. And at the end, we open it up. There's a microphone inside of it because the song is One Mic Then Pass. So basically, we got all these Chicago MCs doing the guest appearances, showing us love, man, from the get-go, and that was in 1999. So we did a lot of shows with these cats, collabed songs with them over the years, brought a lot of them to Michigan, and had successful shows at this place downtown. It was called the Metropolis. It's actually still there downtown, but it's just boarded up, not doing nothing. It's just sitting there dusty, right downtown. It's like right by the Loft.
Downtown
Flint. Yep, the Metropolis. We brought a bunch of Chicago MCs up there, and had some great successful shows, and it was nothing but love for Chicago, man. We went down there a lot, and we did shows at the Double Door, the Subterranean. You definitely got to check out those spots, man. Some real cool clubs down there, the Subterraneous, I think it's called. That's a real dope club that you should check out. We played there a couple times. We saw this great female DJ, Mary Jane, and she was just killing it on the turntables. And I just got to give mad love to, you know, Risky Business, man. He's just a dope DJ. And for him to embrace us, you know, because of a love of hip-hop, he appreciated what we're doing, and he was amazed that these cats from a small town up in Michigan, you know, were doing these big sounds and bringing that skill that was just, like, right on par with these dope Chicago MCs. And I gotta say that, man, Chicago has some of the best MCs. These cats were just beasts with the lyrics and with the freestyle, and I saw some battles down there, and just amazing cats, you know. nothing but dope MCs. We got my man Mike One. He recently passed away a couple years ago, man. Rest in peace. Real cool cat. Invited us over to his studio, recorded a song with us called Shove that we put on our Artful Dodgers Second Wind album. We had a bunch of Chicago MCs on there. And it wasn't like a bunch of money talked about or nothing. They jumped on it for the love of hip hop, man. Just showing us love. All these cats jumped on this posse cut. And, you know, the cat Metamo, another cat that recently passed away, rest in peace. He was from a group out of Chicago called Rubber Room, and they were very famous. And, you know, they did a lot of stuff and made a big noise down in Chicago. So it was an honor, you know, rocking with him, doing some shows with him, and staying in touch with him over the years. And, you know, I got nothing but love for all them Chicago MCs. They got, like, a higher caliber of hip-hop down there, you know. I'm sure they got all styles of hip-hop now, but when we went down there, it was, like, classic boom-bap, super lyrical stuff, you know, because Common was the big MC from Chicago that blew up first, you know. So a lot of cats were, like, kind of following his suit of being more lyrical, with a lot of straight boom bap beats, and you know, him and Twista, you know, of course, they're doing a lot of stuff out of Chicago. And you know, I had a great experience down there, man. We felt so much love in Chicago doing music that we were talking about moving down there at one point, you know. We really wanted to. I really love that area, man. The Windy City's dope. You know, I hope to get down there again soon and try to do some shows too. I'll have to call in some favors, man, and I'll get in touch with you, you know, and collabo down there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sad to say goodbye to Flint.
I'm sure.
And the Flint rap scene, in the sense that I've established a lot of roots here, and
You made a name for yourself.
And as I do things like this, yeah. I continue to do that. Yeah. And so I'm quickly letting go of it. But my friend Rocco Tesla gave me the correct perspective. That's not what's happening. I'm becoming a bridge from Flint to Chicago. So, yeah. My friend, please allow me to provide you the opportunity. Yeah. What I've always been telling people as they come on here is I'm going to need people from Flint to come out and join me on the podcast anyway. And right. It gives you a reason to come out to the city. Yeah. So not only that, but as you just said too, I will be networking and finding guests for the podcast and going to open mics and going to venues and all this. So along with that, there's that bridge too, because of course, if I see an opening, you're on the list, my friend.
And I tell you what, when I see some of my Chicago family down there, sharing some events or something, I'm gonna forward them to you.
Yeah,
so
no,
you know some events to go to, and you can meet some cats, you know, for sure.
Exactly, because like it's just like how I did it in Flint, and I know it's the same thing. I have no doubts. It's not like, you know, I'm going, of course, I am going somewhere and starting in a new place, but in that sense, it's an opportunity. It's not a bad thing. No. I mean, in Flint, that's why what I do works, because I reach out to people. People are bound to say yes. You reach out to 20 people, at least probably 5 of them will respond, and at least probably 3 of them will say yes. I'll say that much.
For sure.
And those 3 that say yes will get... That creates a spider web, and then all of a sudden you get more people saying yes. Yeah, and eventually people start reaching out to you. That's what happens every single time if you really commit to doing something like an interview show. So with this, I'm confident that something like this will definitely blossom in a place like that.
Oh, for sure,
and
man.
Look what you just described with the rap community there and how you see so much talent gravitate towards an area like that. It's because people go to that place for a reason, I feel like. A lot of those people probably weren't born in Chicago. Maybe some of them were, but a lot of talent goes there because they know there's opportunities for them there.
I'm sure.
And so that creates a nice little pool of artists as well.
Yep.
I'm looking forward to these things, man.
Yeah, man, I bet.
Yeah, because I know that I just feel like there's a lot of more room for growth, and I think just in terms of live performance, I think that type of place would get what I'm doing a little bit better, because Flint, I'd have to travel even just out of Flint, but I think even Midwest... The best place for Midwest hip hop probably would be somewhere like that. For what I'm doing, if you heard my music, I think you'd know what I mean. I just think it'd work better in that type of environment than somewhere just like a little local club. If you're in a booming city, just random people rolling up to a show because they want to have a good night, in a place where that type of thing happens, that's where my music could really shine. You know, just a random night out on town. Yeah. Hey, who's this guy? oh my God, what the, I've just discovered the best rapper in the world. You're from where now, Flint? What are you talking about? That's a story right there.
Right,
so
right.
I like the way that story sounds.
That sounds very good, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. It sounds better than me just rolling up to a show in Flint and rocking their socks off like I would right. now. I want to make it even grander than that. So I'm looking forward to leveling up, man.
That's true.
I'm happy to, I try not to bring it up a million times every time I have a conversation. So
right.
when you allow me to like this, thank you. Thank you. Because definitely. I'm very excited. And I'm glad you're excited for me, man. I hope that other people can look at me doing something like this and see it for that story that it is. That, you know, you should follow whatever it is you want to do.
Yeah, for sure.
And even if it fails, even if this doesn't go the way I want it to, the fact that I'm following it is something that people should take away from that. Like, you need to follow whatever it is.
Yeah, man.
Soul or your intuition.
You
got to
get out of your comfort zone sometimes. That's good for you. You can't be comfortable all the time. And, you know, you got to keep moving forward. And you're right, try different things. And it's like when you're talking about the show scene in Flint and Detroit, it's a tough scene. Because even when they love you, a lot of time the best you're going to get is this.
Yeah, exactly.
Or maybe like this, maybe.
Yeah.
That's about as good as you're going to get from Flint or Detroit at a hip-hop show. But then the best experience I've had, besides out of our state, was in Traverse City, Michigan. Up there is just a great festive area. I did a couple shows at Artful Dodgers up there, man, and people straight up danced to our music. They were on the full dance floor, everybody dancing. Like, that would never happen in these other areas. Just the people up there were just having so much fun, and it's like we weren't even doing, you know, like mixtape versions of like new school beats or nothing. We were doing our straight up original hip hop music, and they were straight up dancing and loving it, man. And it was a great experience. But I got huge, you know, huge fucking love and respect for the Flint and Detroit areas, because they're hard crowds, man. If you don't bring that real raw skill and passion and love, they'll call you out for it for sure. You know,
is Traverse City the cherry place?
Yep, I think you're right. Cherry Festival.
This is wild. It's wild that you mentioned that, because I have a very similar story about Traverse City on my visit there.
Awesome.
So when I went there, they were having, I have video of it because I filmed it, because it was so bizarre to me, because I was thinking as I saw it, I would never see this in Flint, Michigan. So it was like, it was a dance festival, and it was a bunch of people from probably the high school, and they were playing like live jazz music and stuff like this, and they were all dancing and doing dance things, and I'm not even describing it properly. It was like a scene from Dirty Dancing almost. Like, it literally felt like something from a movie. I couldn't believe it. I was like, people do this type of thing? And that was one of the experiences I had, actually, that was so fundamental in my thought process with this move, is that, whoa, people think so differently outside of Flint.
Oh,
holy moly. Like, I am missing a lot of the world right here.
That's true.
Because I didn't know that could exist. You could not organize that in Flint.
No.
You know, that just wouldn't work. If you went to that little parking lot downtown and you just said, all right, we're all going to dance.
Right.
Five people are going to show up.
Right, right.
And it's probably people who just are, it's a pity party. Like, they're trying to, they're hoping you're not going to actually make them dance.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a whole new world out there. And I feel like, you know, it's just important that people do, like you said, get out of their comfort zone.
Exactly. One thing I'm excited about right now is I'm getting ready to play Alley Fest in Flint, which is Saturday, July 8th. And, you know, I'm just really expecting a good time, man. I've seen footage of the past events at Alley Fest, and they just close down Buckham Alley, put like a stage on each end, and have groups and bands play, man, and just mad people downtown. So I'm looking forward to that, man, rocking that. And Rob Banks' organization is going to be backing me up for that. I'm thinking my man DJ Virus is going to be coming out for that. And actually, the day that this podcast drops, we were talking about earlier, I'm doing the record swap at the Flint Local 432. So if you're watching this right now, get down there. It's probably going on. You know, we're talking time travel shit now.
The future is now.
The future is now. You know, So come down to the Record Swap at the Flint Local 432. It's free to get in, and there'll be mad vendors in there selling used vinyl, new vinyl, dope vinyl, all genres, you know, rock, hip-hop, all that stuff. And I got a big love for vinyl, man. I'm a huge record collector, you know. That's a big part of my life, too.
Ah, that's why you can't get any more hats.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, my hat collection is done, so now I go for the vinyl. And plus, I love movies, too. I collect movies as well.
Oh.
I still like having the hard copies of movies, you know, so.
Interesting choice.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I agree with that, because streaming is crazy. People buy movies on streaming.
It is.
You don't actually own it.
You don't own it. So why not just track it down and buy it real quick? You own it forever.
Yeah.
And plus, I don't trust streaming because you never know when it'll go away. I don't trust these clouds because you never know when the computer might have a problem. You can't access your titles.
You don't actually own it.
You don't actually own it.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm always going to keep a player in my movie collection. And plus, I like the special features and stuff, too, you know, for sure. Get all that background making of stuff.
Deleted scenes, bloopers.
Deleted scenes, yep, all that good stuff.
Yeah, and the early thousands DVDs really got that stuff right.
Like, yeah.
I can't imagine movies still do all. Like, I remember they used to have the animated menus and everything in the day. They used to really...
You're right.
Because the DVD was what you were getting. It wasn't like there was streaming. So
That's true.
Open the DVD and you would actually judge the movie based on the menu that you saw before you watched the movie. And I remember another thing that I missed that we don't have anymore. You know how there is timestamps on YouTube? Like if you go through a YouTube video, it has timestamps sometimes. Are you familiar with this?
Oh, yeah.
So
I know what you mean.
That's what the chapters on the movies used to kind of be, where there was a guy who would go through and actually timestamp the movie. And if you went to the chapter section on the DVD, each chapter would have a name. And like I would actually look and see how many chapters there were in this movie. I'd be like, whoa, there's 23 chapters in Willy Wonka, the Chocolate Factory?
Yeah, I do like that. They name each chapter, too.
Do they still do that?
I think maybe they do, because I get Blu-rays of even new movies that just came out, you know?
Blu-rays are where it's at, because the thing is that what people really don't understand about videos is, let me just explain bitrate as simple as it is. So if you're watching streaming and it's streaming at 4K, that's probably around 40,000 bitrate. And if you stream it on Blu-ray, I think what it is 100,000. So that's at least 2.5 times more detail on the Blu-ray compared to streaming. And that's if the streaming's perfect.
Right.
So that's a world of a difference. Because bitrate is the one thing that it just ruins everything with streaming. Like, you don't realize how much you're losing. When you watch things on cable, you lose way more than you lose on streaming. When they say 4K cable, like, that ain't even the same thing.
No, not as the same as a 4K Blu-ray. No,
not even comparing to that.
You know?
So, yeah, I mean.
And I'm such a movie fan. I want that quality and that detail. You know, it's important.
I have.
And not everything's fucking available.
You're telling
for streaming.
No, it's not. And you're telling me this, and I don't know if you saw when you walked into here. I got a 75-inch TV outside of this room because I love movies.
Nice.
But I don't have a Blu-ray player, so I can't do this. And that's the way I should be watching it, on that screen.
Yes,
it's made for that.
Yeah.
Not on these streaming services.
Yeah, you can get Blu-rays pretty cheap now, too, the players, and then just get your favorite movies at least, you know? Top 10 or something.
Okay, so you're a lover of movies.
Yeah.
What are some movies you would recommend to people? Just
some of my
favorites. I don't want to say your favorite movies, but just movies for people that are like, you know what? Yeah. What are some of your favorite movies? That's a good question.
Okay. Some of my favorite movies would be, I like Enter the Dragon with Bruce Lee's big for me. I like Taxi Driver, Robert De Niro. I like a lot of Martin Scorsese movies. I'm really big on Quentin Tarantino movies. Pulp Fiction, of course. Reservoir Dogs, Kill Bill, you know, all his greats. I like John Carpenter a lot, who does Escape from New York, Halloween, They Live.
Okay,
a lot of good movies. I'm huge on him.
This is why I was going to preface it differently, because are there any more obscure movies you might be able to mention to people? Like, movies they wouldn't expect because, you know, a lot of the movies you listed, they're great films.
Right.
But they're films that are commercially popular.
That's true. Some more obscure ones, I would say, I really like Martin, which is a vampire movie by George Romero.
Ooh.
I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's the guy that did Dawn of the Dead, Night of the Living Dead, all those movies. But it's basically a vampire movie called Martin, so I suggest that. That's a good one. I like a lot of Romero movies. You can't go wrong with any of his stuff.
What years were he making movies?
Throughout the 60s you know, out through the 80s, and he had a brief kind of comeback in the early 2000s.
Okay.
He passed away, you know, a few years back, whatever. He's not doing anything anymore.
I'm not familiar with any of his movies.
Yeah, but check out the original Dawn of the Dead. I think it's from, like, 78.
Oh, that's him.
Yeah, that's him where they're in the mall and stuff. He's the one that did that. I mean, he pretty much invented the genre of the zombie movies.
Gotcha.
Of what we see with Walking Dead and stuff like that. It's all kind of, like, influenced by Romero. Another good obscure one I would say is, like, you ever seen Hobo with a Shotgun?
No.
Oh, that's a great one with Rutger Hauer, you know. He's great. He was in Blade Runner with Harrison Ford, which is another dope movie. I'm real big on ninja movies, martial arts movies. Five Deadly Venoms is a great martial arts movie. I really like, have you ever heard of Shogun Assassin?
No, I haven't seen any martial arts movies either. So I'm glad that you're giving me good intros to that because... Yeah. I mean, all I really know is Bruce Lee made good ones.
Yep, his are some of the greatest for sure.
Yeah,
I'm really big on this cat, Sho Kasugi. He did a lot of ninja movies in the 80s, Revenge of the Ninja, Ninja 3, The Domination, Enter the Ninja. He did a bunch of cool ones. He did a TV show with Lee Van Cleef called The Master. Sho Kasugi was pretty dope. He actually did a movie with Jean-Claude Van Damme that was pretty good called Black Eagle. And they had a couple good fight scenes in that. So I suggest definitely Sho Kasugi's worth checking out. I like American Ninja is a good movie. I really like stop motion animation creature features from back in the day too. I don't know if you're familiar with those. There's this animator Ray Harryhausen. I really like his movies, like Clash of the Titans, the original one, his Sinbad films, you know. He had a lot of great movies back in the day, and so I like, you know, the mainstream ones, and I do like a lot of obscure ones too. And the one I was talking about before, Shogun Assassin, you definitely gotta check that out. They reference it in Kill Bill a little bit. They talk about it, but it's just an amazing samurai flick with heads getting chopped off, and it's the one time where American tampering has made a foreign film better.
Really?
Because basically what they did is they kind of took this samurai TV series and they shortened it down to like less than 2-hour movie. They put different music in it and kind of changed the storyline a little bit, and it's amazing. You know what I mean? It's like better than the original. And it's like that's only time that's ever happened. You know,
history.
Yeah, exactly. Other stuff I like. I like the Mad Max stuff, the early Mad Max films, Road Warrior, Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. You know, those are all dope ones. I like all Stephen King movies, of course.
Yeah,
he's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't read his books a whole lot either.
I've read quite a few of them, man. They're really good. My dad, big shouts out to my dad. He turned me on to Stephen King at a really young age, gave me some books to read, and I've read a lot of stuff. And I even like watching the movie first and then reading the book.
Oh,
then
really?
Because then you can, like, visualize the characters, and it gives you more.
I bet that just hearing you say that would probably make Stephen King angry.
It probably would, man. Yeah. But strange enough, I like it both ways. You know, sometimes it's great you read it first and then you see the movie. That's happened to me too, and that's a dope experience too, because it's like it kind of shows you what you played out in your mind. And
well, I just think that how I look at it is the book is the artist's original intention.
Yes.
So when you see the movie regularly, like almost every time, you're seeing a bastardized version
of the book. It's filtered,
I mean,
watered down.
Even if it's a good movie, Stephen King probably doesn't like it. Like with The Shining. I love The Shining as a movie.
Me too.
I haven't read The Shining as a book, but I know Stephen King doesn't like the movie at all.
That's true.
Probably because he feels like it missed the point of whatever he was doing.
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
But I love the movie too, man.
Yeah, it's one of those
things. The music, it's just Stanley Kubrick, man. He's great.
You
ever seen Clockwork Orange?
So
that's a great Kubrick film.
For some reason, and I'm kind of ashamed to admit this, I watched about 40 minutes of that movie, and I just didn't get it. And
it's crazy.
And that's a strange thing for me to say, because I know it's good. And I haven't seen 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Oh, check
and
that
And I know
out.
That's one of the best movies of all time. Yeah. I'm just robbing myself of it. Maybe I've just been, you know what, it's not
it's
that.
Good.
I've been waiting for the right time.
That's a good movie to get blazed and just turn it up loud, because it's got like classical music with these like awesome imageries of space travel. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Thanks for the recommendation. Yeah. I think I might take that strategy.
Pretty much all Stanley Kubrick films are good. You know, he's just like kind of like John Carpenter, man. He's just somebody where I like all his stuff, you know, nothing but dope films.
Was he The Thing, too?
The Thing, was. What I liked about him is that he did the score in a lot of his movies, too. So he's like directing, sometimes writing and scoring. And then that, you know, another cat that does that I really respect and I like his films, Robert Rodriguez, who does like Machete and Desperado. Desperado and all those movies, man. He's pretty good, too.
Yeah?
Yeah, I like his movies. If you ever have a chance, a good foreign film would be his original movie, El Mariachi, which is kind of like the early low-budget Desperado.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, are those like, are they meant to be traditional Westerns? Are they a play on traditional Westerns?
Yeah, like, it's kind of like a modern Western, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I just wonder, like, when I've seen the promotional material, but I've never actually watched one of the films. So I always want, like, with Machete especially.
Yeah, it's like modern days. They got cars and stuff, but there's definitely, like, a Western element for sure.
No, but I just mean, like, are they're not playing on the genre. It's not tongue-in-cheek. Like, it is a Western. It's not meant to be, like, Machete.
Yeah.
You know, wink, wink, right? it's Machete all the way. He's a Western hero.
Oh, yeah.
And I want to ask you, too, are you familiar with Paul Thomas Anderson?
Oh, yeah.
Dude, he's my favorite director.
Yeah,
he's my favorite of all time.
Ones. Yeah.
Because the way that he, the last of his movies that I've witnessed is, the first one I saw was The Master. And the last one I've seen is Boogie Nights. And it was because it was just recently on Netflix. I watched it on streaming.
It was a good one.
Shame on me. But I did it. Dude. You know what? You know, actually, not shame on me, because the way I used to watch movies was disgraceful. I used to watch them on, let's say I didn't do this. Someone I met did this, and he would go to these illegal websites and watch them on there.
Right.
I was like, dude, don't do that. And he just kept doing it. But that's what he would always do. And I can't even tell you about the bitrate on those websites,
yeah,
okay?
Exactly.
Like that. No, streaming's a godsend when you compare it to that. I watch videos.
You're stealing the soul out of the movie with the shitty fucking visuals.
There's so many movies where it wasn't even just that. It was like you hear people in the theater talking to each other about their breakfast while Rocky's giving a speech.
Right.
So, yeah. What movie was I? Oh, Paul Thomas Anderson.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Boogie Nights. Fantastic.
Yeah.
And the way that he does montage in his movies is really what impresses me the most, I feel like. And there's two things. It's that, because he has a way of incorporating a song into a story that just works.
I like Gretcher do that, yeah.
Yeah, and he does it in a magical way that only the best directors can do, where you know, like, they had this song in mind as they filmed all of this. It all fell into place just to be this montage.
And,
like, a show that does that really well would be Better Call Saul, which Breaking Bad did it first, and they're just playing off of that.
I still gotta see that show.
The meth montages on that show are what gave it a lot of personality.
Nice.
So, and that was just, like, meth and like, EDM music at first. Just, like, techno, pop music. It was interesting. It was a very interesting thing. And so montage, the power of montage. And he just illustrates that in this beautiful way. And also, one thing I always notice about his films is that they feel like they could have ended like five times. Like, he tells so many stories within one story.
Right.
And that's a beautiful thing to me. It's just the ability to have this story feel
levels.
So grand. Every single one of his movies is like this, where
that's
it's
dope.
Just not a conventional. Even if it's not that, it's just an unconventional way of telling a story.
Yeah.
It's one of the two of those things. He's got a very particular touch. And Martin Scorsese's also.
Ooh, man.
I mean, he's
great.
Up there in my top directors as
he's
well. If we're talking
he
favorites.
Does. Yeah, yeah, me too, man. He's one of my favorites.
He can't fail.
No, he can't. I think I own almost every one of his movies.
Taxi Driver, when I saw it for the first time, that's another movie I saw way too late in my life. Oh, my God. Because I saw, the best way I can describe it is if people have seen The Joker, the latest Joker film.
Yeah.
Similar I saw vibe. That before Taxi Driver.
Oh,
and what
okay,
I realized
wow.
when I watched Taxi Driver is, oh, my God. The Joker is a poor excuse of Taxi Driver. Like, they're trying to be Taxi Driver so much. And you don't realize that if you see the Joker first. But when you see Joker second, you're like, whoa. To me, no offense to anybody, but it makes perfect sense. It's exactly what you would expect from the director of The Hangover making Taxi Driver with the Joker as the main character. It makes perfect sense. That's what the movie is.
Make the anti-hero.
Yeah.
It's true.
And if you watch Taxi Driver, it's a master at work. It's Martin fucking Scorsese.
Yeah.
You just can't compare those two directors. And that's why I preface it, no offense to anybody.
Right.
Hangover's a great movie, but it's a whole different type of film.
That's true.
And you just can't... I think those are two different skill sets. And the way that Martin Scorsese approaches such a abstract concept Like, he's just able to touch on it in such a human way. Like, it's a human movie. Oh, it's a movie that I feel like everybody can understand what it's saying about solitude and the way that can drive people to this certain type of madness. And even though the main character is an anti-hero, which this is one of the first anti-hero stories that really was big, I would say, in film.
Yeah, it's crazy how it's like he almost assassinates the president guy, but then he don't. And then he goes and saves the little hooker instead and kills the pimp and kind of becomes a hero. But it's like
Okay, spoiler alert for the next... Oh, I guess spoilers for that whole thing. Dang it. It came out in the 70s. People have had plenty of time. They have had time, but I have to remember, I just saw this movie 2 years ago for the first time. If I was listening up to that, I'd be like, no!
Sorry about that, everybody. Yeah, it's great film, though. Even with the spoiler, it's worth watching.
Even with the spoiler, I was about to drop a spoiler alert anyway, right as you said that, because I was about to say the ending. Martin Scorsese says that it's not a dream sequence at the end there. He says that when he's in the car at the end, that that's actually reality, which I can't even figure out what Scorsese means by that. Maybe he's just fucking with people when he says that.
I love that last little shot after he drops Sybil Shepherd off and she wants to pay and he's like, don't worry about it. And he drives away and the music's kind of like romantic and chill, but then there's that little flicker of a weird instrument and then the light and it's like, he's still crazy. You know what I mean? He still might go assassinate that president, you know what I mean, or something. You know, and my love of film goes even deeper, man. I want to make movies. I've made a bunch with my camcorder back in the day with my friends. I made a student film when I went to U of M Flint called Breaking the Chain, a little half-hour long kind of like crime drama, and it turned out real dope. Got all my friends in it and stuff and edited it and shot it around Flint. And that's actually available on the Artful Dodgers DVD. If anybody can get their hands on that, we put that on there. And I basically wrote it all myself, shot it myself, edited it myself, did a lot of the music myself. And I would love to continue doing that, man. I got like probably 3 or 4 screenplays in my mind that I need to just get on that keyboard and type out, you know. And
movies are tough.
They are tough.
What I've learned is that there's an actual standard for script writing.
Yes.
Shout out Max Landis, who used to drop a lot of that information on his YouTube channel. Because I learned that, I remember, in middle school and high school, and I had similar dreams, man. Yeah. Film is actually what got me into getting a camera. I wanted to be able to film my content in a way where I wouldn't have to use my phone. And it was a DSLR for the longest time. This GoPro is just a more convenient way to do most things.
Right.
Both are useful for different scenarios.
You had interest in doing movies then?
But that's what it was. Yeah. And people film movies on phones nowadays. Yeah. You can do it on anything. And
I'm sure I would. If I was young and had a phone, I would.
Yeah, especially if you have people that are willing to do it. Because that was what always stopped me. Is I always had this idea that, I'm not going to be able to get a bunch of people together to actually do this. Right. And if they do, I'm forcing them to do it. They're not actually... I never had a community of acting friends, I suppose. And I also, I was saying, films are tough. I don't know how I'd write a film because of these standards with scripts. And maybe you could do it loosey-goosey and write your very first script.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be perfect. I guess you got to go for it. You got to write it.
Yeah.
But you got to know that's a first draft. And you got to be able to improve on that first draft. That would be my advice there, I suppose. And that's...
Yeah.
I just...
With my student
I know you've written films before. Yeah. So I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to myself.
Right, right.
And the people. I'm talking to the people.
And with my student film, I wrote, you know, some of the dialogue scenes, but there were some scenes that I just let them ad-lib. I explained what to do, and I just let people go ad-lib freestyles, and it turned out good, too. So there's, like, a little bit of both in
there. Well, you can get even better acting through doing things
sometimes,
like that.
Because
it's people just pulling out whatever it is.
They'll react to each other.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what the entire show Curb Your Enthusiasm is.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. I love that show, man. Oh, man, Larry David's a genius.
Yeah.
He's so funny, man. I love the stuff he comes up with that you can relate to of, like, everyday life annoyances and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
It's great, you know? And that's what really made me be a fan of that show, especially since I was a fan of Seinfeld, which is, like, the greatest sitcom ever.
Seinfeld was him, though.
It was him, exactly.
It was Larry David.
Exactly. Seinfeld was just the, the guy to help him get him in the door, kind of the more family-friendly, handsome guy, that more of a front man, you know? Larry David, you know, they based George Costanza on him. He was kind of more the nerd and guy that would get all pissed off, had a short temper and stuff. But you're right, man. He was the genius behind it because all those little nuances and weird things like close talkers, low talkers, you know, stuff like man hands, you know. It's like that's all shit that could be out of real life and it's like relatable. You know, they say he walks around with a little pad and pen and like whenever something like that comes across, he'll write it in there. And
So Roos has to keep a handle on a lot of his dreams, right? Because us people, us creative people, we have a lot of them. We want to be filmmakers. We want to be artists. We want to mix our own music. We want to be DJs, right? So I also, I say this is a comedy podcast, and I know at some point Roos will be a comedian. Because, dude, I have people come in here, and I just make people laugh on accident.
That's cool.
I just know I just have to figure out how to hone that.
Have you ever attempted it?
No, not in front of a captive audience.
Right.
Just in front of people that I'm just riffing off of. But I know in this context, I can just be funny. I'm not even trying. And it's like, if I call this a comedy podcast, we can say whatever we want.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
It's true.
So
base and shit. Good.
The only thing that comedians are doing, they're just playing into that. They just know that people think they're comedians, so they play into the fact, they expect me to be funny.
Yeah.
That's it. So once I just firmly establish it, we're all the way there. But I feel like a comedian already. That's how awesome. I like to put it. But I just don't know how it's going to go on a stage. I have a list of bits on my phone that maybe I could show you some of them privately, but I can't reveal them on the podcast, of course.
You got to work out your material. You got to work it out. And you'll start at a little smaller open mic comedy club and test it out, you know, and see what works.
I get material through these podcasts. And connecting it back to what we were just talking about,
awesome,
I heard
man.
Jerry Seinfeld say that he gets his material all the time through everything. He's always listening for new material. And that's why I even thought of the comedy thing, because just seeing things like that growing up and seeing the way that comedy podcasts work and comedians work, like, it's not far from the way that someone like me would operate.
True.
Comedians are just interesting people who have found a way to access that part of their personality.
And they're quick, you know, they can always talk, they're always on.
Comedians are fun, man.
Yeah, man.
Are there any comedians in particular that you follow? Are you a fan of comedy at all?
Oh, I mean, I love comedy. I like cats like, Dave Chappelle, of course.
Of course.
And, I liked Rodney Dangerfield a lot. Robin Williams was great.
Yeah.
A lot of great comedians out there. George Carlin was really good. Richard Pryor, of course.
Well, you're talking legends.
Yeah. When I was younger, of course, I liked, Eddie Murphy. He was really good with his original stand-up. Andrew Dice Clay, I got to mention.
Yeah.
You know, he'd definitely get canceled nowadays. He was so raunchy, but, you know, he was really funny. I liked all them cats, for sure. I really liked those Comedy Central roasts.
Bill Hicks.
Those are pretty good. Bill Hicks is good. Yep. I like him. There's a lot of good comedians out there, you know. I can't really think of anybody else, though. I think that's about it, comedy-wise. Of course, I do love Seinfeld. He's probably one of my favorites, man. I always watch his special. Chris Rock is good, too, of course.
Yeah.
Yep, I like him. Yeah. And even Adam Sandler, you know, he was pretty good. I like when he gets on the guitar and does the songs.
I haven't really gotten familiar with the stand-up. Speaking of Chicago, man, one of the times I was in Chicago recently, I was with my niece and my mom, and we were looking at something to do that night, and Adam Sandler was playing like an hour away from us, and we could have went, but we had my niece, and he was going to swear and talk about swears.
Oh, of course. He's raunchy for sure.
It could have went fine. I'm not familiar with how his music is, but she's nine. She would get what's going on. If he starts saying something really raunchy.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, yeah, but my boy Adam Sandler, he's one of my inspirations.
He's great, man. We always talk about his films, me and my friends, and, you know, Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore, those early ones, man, are just great. So funny.
Yeah. He's just great at, just being himself.
Yeah.
And he's
great
just
character
a
actor, too.
Great guy.
When he commits to, like, a voice and mannerisms, he'll carry that out through the whole movie. Like, he's dedicated.
Have you seen Uncut Gems?
No, I haven't seen that yet. I heard good things, though.
Man.
Good, huh?
I mean, have you seen any of his recent, or any of his, not recent, but any of his serious films, I should say.
I guess I've seen a couple of them.
Did you see the Paul Thomas Anderson one? Punch Drunk Love?
Yes, I like that one. I thought he did good. That kind of gets hated on for some reason, but I've heard people kind of diss on it, but I thought it was good, man.
They're crazy people.
I liked Philip Seymour Hoffman as the bad guy
instead. Well, and he's only in...
He's like, Mattress Man!
One thing that's so great about his appearance in that film is that it's so brief.
It's just like a little gem in there for you.
Dude, that movie's so good.
Yeah.
That's actually one of the other ones on Paul Thomas Anderson's catalog that I waited towards the end.
Oh, okay.
Like, I saw that one, and then probably Boogie Nights. It was probably those two at the last two I saw. I feel like The Master is also Philip Seymour Hoffman. Speaking of him,
he's
just
great.
An amazing film. The Master is such a good. Have you seen that
no,
one?
No, I haven't seen that actually.
Oh,
that
man.
Was good, huh?
Oh, it's the first one I saw of his movies that really, like, made me understand how great of a director he was. Because
I'll check that out.
The best way to describe it is it's based on Scientology.
Oh, okay.
And it's about a relationship between two guys. It's about a relationship between two people and how that bond, even though they're two very different people, they feed off of each other in these ways where it's just hard for them to disconnect. That's what the movie's about. That's the best way I could describe it.
Okay.
Because what I hate about trailers nowadays, speaking on movies, like, I don't know about you, man. This is how I am. If I'm at a movie and the trailers are about to come on, I will walk out and wait 10 to 15 minutes and then come back in, because I know how trailers are nowadays.
Yeah.
They give away the whole movie.
They kind of do.
You got to witness the generation where trailers didn't do that.
It'd be real
people
short and sweet.
People don't get it nowadays. Yeah. They don't understand. Trailers aren't what they used to be.
Man, that's a good point.
They tell you the whole story. They feel like they have to they show you the climax of the movie.
Yeah, they step by step kind of jump through the movie. You're right, man. I hate that too.
And I remember it. I'm the guy that remembers that whole trailer.
So and then when you see the movie, you're just like, oh, I saw this, saw this. Yeah, you're right, man.
I just walk out. I wait 10 to 15 minutes. And that's why I whenever we're going to the movie theater, I'm like, don't worry. We can be 10 to 15 minutes late. You don't understand.
Yeah.
You don't even want to see those trailers.
That's true, man.
Trust
I do hate
me.
That.
Because, I guess maybe it's because I'm in the world of movies, too. So I know, oh, it's got this actor in it. It's got this director. Okay, I'm going to watch that.
Yeah.
Oh, it's made by this dude. Like, if it's A24, oh, I'll probably watch that.
Yeah.
Like, if I just have to know, oh, it's a Martin Scorsese. Like, oh, my gosh. I started watching a trailer. I saw Leonardo DiCaprio in the title.
Oh, the new
I saw Leonardo DiCaprio, Robert De Niro. So I click it. I'm like, what is this? And then when I'm 30 seconds in, I scroll. I read the description. I see Martin Scorsese. I stop the trailer immediately.
Nice.
I don't need to see any more of this.
I'm out of here.
That's all I had to know. I thought it was just Leonardo DiCaprio, Robert De Niro. When I saw Martin Scorsese, okay, now I'm sold. That's all I had to see. All you had to do was tell me Martin Scorsese was making a new movie.
Right,
I would have
went
and saw that no matter
what.
Yeah,
that's what the trailer could be, just like Martin Scorsese.
Just his name.
Yeah, I love that things came full circle with him because, you know, De Niro was his guy for so long.
Yeah.
They did all those movies together. I think they won the Oscar with Raging Bull, and they did tons of movies together.
That's the one I haven't seen.
You haven't seen Raging Bull?
Yeah.
Oh, you got to see it, man. It's brilliant. Man, it's all in black and white, which is kind of strange, but it's like based on the true life story of Jake LaMotta. It's incredible, man.
And that wasn't the first time they worked together. They did work together on some film right before.
Yeah, Mean Streets.
Yes.
Yep. That's I know my Scorsese.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, for sure, man.
And then it was Goodfellas.
Yep. And then, you fast forward all these years later, he don't do so much stuff with De Niro anymore, and kind of Leonardo became his guy. They did Departed together, Shutter Island together. They did quite a few of movies together, and then now he's, bringing Leonardo and De Niro together, both of his guys. So.
Oh, it is the first time?
Yeah.
I really, really like how he brought Leonardo and Nicholson together.
Yes.
Because that's a great combination, too.
I agree, man.
That was that movie is another... fantastic Martin Scorsese.
I think that might have been Jack Nicholson's last movie, too. I think he's retired now.
Really?
Yeah, I think so, man. I think
no
I heard
way.
That. Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Like, Bucket List was after that, right?
That was before that. Yep, I think his last ones were the Adam Sandler one, Anger Management, and then Departed.
I had no idea.
Yeah, so there won't be no more movies with Jack.
Wow, man. It's a shame that I'm about to go to Chicago, because we could do a full-on movie podcast, you and I.
Like, we could,
you
man.
Ought to come out to Chicago, and we should just talk movies for an hour and a half.
I'm down for that,
Somebody suggested to me to do, because I've thought about this for a while. I just need the right person to do it with. You seem like a guy who's passionate about his movies, right? So
it
might work with you. We both watch a movie. And then maybe two or three, right?
Okay.
But we pick a few movies. And then there's even things that already do this on YouTube. And then we just review all two or three of those movies in 1 hour and a half podcast. We spend 30 minutes on each movie. And you could even do it with new movies that just came out. You could do it with movies that are classics, or you could do both. You could do different episodes.
Yeah, maybe even do like themes, like a newer movie, an older movie with a similar, similar theme, sci-fi or action.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So if you want to be a part of that.
Yeah, man, we definitely could do another movie episode for sure.
I just feel like that'd be a great time because I love movies, man.
Me too,
Crazy
like for him.
I said to you, like you said to me, I picture myself as a filmmaker.
Yeah.
And there's... I'll watch movies, not in a critical sense, but just as an I appreciate the art form.
Yeah.
And I like to see, just
me
with
too.
Music, I like to see the different approaches that people have and the way that There's always new films coming out where different filmmakers are doing great things, and that's why you hear these things about Marvel movies are making the cinema a different thing, and streaming is changing cinema, because cinema is supposed to be this grand thing where we are thinking outside of the box, and we are bringing all these people to the big screen to show them something larger than life. There's something beautiful about film that it can accomplish. Yeah. And that's why true. That's why we list these beautiful filmmakers that have made these films that live on throughout time, because there's a certain thing you can do to make a great movie.
Yes.
And it's a shame to see so many movies that are just cookie cutter and to see those promoted, because it is true that the industry's not what it used to be.
No.
And I love me. Like, even if you look at, like, 2005 to 2010, there were so many iconic films that still live on to this day. And just the nature of, like, I think 2008 was, like, a crazy year for films. We're talking Dark Knight. There's so many more.
Oh, yeah.
So many more. I feel like Elf was around 2008.
That's a great one. Yeah, yeah.
There's so many that I'm not thinking of.
Yeah.
If I just pulled up a list, it could blow minds, I'm telling you.
Yeah, man.
But you don't realize how differently the landscape is until you look at stuff like that.
Yeah, I love watching and appreciating the angles and the lighting. And, you know, it's like with CGI, I hate bad CGI when it looks real cartoony.
And there's so much more. Oh. People embrace CGI so much more than they used to.
That's true, too, yeah. I like when the artist really gets in there though and like shades it correctly and puts the lighting and like really makes it photorealistic. You know, some movies achieve that, but some kind of
expensive. It's the ones with the right budget.
That's the thing.
Because I mean, I hear there's so much of like the problem people have with these Marvel movies is that they don't have the budget to be able to support the time frame that they're going for. They're trying to make these movies so fast, and so you'll actually go and see the movie, and there'll be parts that people will complain about. And even the guy who made the most recent Thor movie, Taika Waititi, on an interview, and he was talking about, like, he was actually criticizing how the special effects looked in the finished product on the, like, Variety scene analysis video he was doing, which you could say it's disrespectful to the people, the VFX team, and it kind of is.
Yeah, that's
because
he's
not seeing the perspective of them, where it's like that they don't have enough time to actually make that stuff look good. But that goes beyond all of it. It's actually just, if you can do things practical, you ought to, because that's what the best filmmakers always do, and they prove it every time. I'm trying to think of the guy who made Tenet, who made Inception.
Christopher Nolan, yep.
He always does practical. And
always.
That blows my mind, because if you guys are familiar with the scene in Inception where the city bends sideways,
it's so dope.
That's practical effects. Like, that's real. He actually had that built to look like that.
That's awesome.
It's all practical, and that's why it looks so good.
Yeah.
Because he commits to that.
That's true. That's why I like Hellboy 2. Have you ever seen that one? It looks really good, because he's got Guillermo del Toro, the director, has got these, like, awesome creature puppets built, but then they'll have, like, CGI on top of it, kind of.
Oh, it's all...
So it's a little bit of both.
Yeah, that's the
so
best way to do it.
You're actually seeing something that's really there, but then, like, you know, the mouth is more animated and stuff. And
oh, and we could do that better now than we could then.
Oh, yeah,
so if we just continue doing stuff like that, that's the better way to go.
Yeah, it should be a little mix of practical and CGI. A little best of both worlds.
Yeah.
It looks better with blood to me. The old movies with the blood splatters look better than the CGI bloods. It always looks too cartoony.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, man.
Well, maybe it's just shortcuts, too.
Well, it is what you said. The budgets and the fucking schedules. They're trying to meet these quotas and schedules, and they're trying to pump out so many things. So they probably are taking a lot of shortcuts. They don't really get to kind of lavishly go over the details like, you know, some of these other movies probably have.
Yeah, I mean, I always think that with TV shows especially.
Oh,
can you imagine just the...
Sci-fi channel, CGI. Mega Shark versus Crocosaurus.
Okay.
Like, shit looks
Sharknado.
Terrible. Sharknado, that type of shit. Oh, man.
But you're mentioning the worst of the worst.
I
think it's Crypt. I think that's the name of the studio that makes all those. But it's like a certain studio that produces most of those
the
movies.
The worst one I ever saw was... what was it? Lavantula. It was like a lava-breathing giant tarantula.
Woo!
Lavantula. It was terrible.
Birdemic was on TV once.
Ooh, Birdemic.
There's Birdemic, and I think there's Birdemic 2.
Damn.
Yeah.
We even got a sequel. Yikes.
Sharknado went 3 times.
5 times, actually. There's 5 Sharknados. I shit you not.
I thought it was three.
It's terrible, man.
Wow, that's too much, man.
I'm a happy homeboy from 90210, got some gigs, but those movies are ridiculous.
I think they got Miley in the third one.
Oh, damn. I believe it.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting case because... I mean, that's an exaggerated form of what I was about to mention. That is wild that those films are even made.
I know, you know.
But, you know.
Who likes that?
At a certain point, it's novelty,
right? It is almost tongue-in-cheek, supposed to be funny. They probably make the effects as bad as possible on purpose. You know,
dude, if you're walking into a room and you're talking to three guys trying to get funding for Birdemic 2, there's no way you're not pitching that as a little bit of a bit.
That's true.
Like, you guys know how you loved Birdemic 1, right? Well, have I got the movie for you? You just tease him a little bit. He could probably get the money for it. They probably like, man, these guys, sci-fi, it's amazing this channel even exists. We'll throw them $10,000. They'll do their best. But, yeah, and like, 50% of the funding goes towards casting Owen Wilson as the dad.
Yeah, right, yeah, exactly. Yeah, one star. Yeah, exactly. That's how it is. And like we were talking earlier, I like the big screen for, like, spectacle movies. You know, like, I had to go to see IMAX Guardians of the Galaxy or King Kong vs. Godzilla. I like to see those big spectacle movies on a large screen. Whereas, like,
IMAX is so nice.
Oh, man, the IMAX is just beautiful, man.
I feel like the sound's better in there, right?
Yeah.
Because it's like,
it brings it to life.
Yeah.
You know, it really brings the imagery to life. And it's just not the same. I can't believe some people watch movies on their phones. It's like, it's not the same.
Oh,
you could watch a TV show or, you know, something like that, or even like a comedy or drama, but just those big spectacle ones, you got to watch it on a big screen.
Well, David Lynch is known for saying, like, that watching a movie on a phone is, like, disgraceful. Like, there's a quote where he just said, like, he can't even believe that people do that. But, like, he's actually probably my second favorite director, right behind or tied with Philip Seymour Hoffman, or PTA, I'm sorry, yep. Philip Thomas Anderson. They're so close, because David Lynch is just one of those people that has shown me the way you can make art its own. And,
he's dope.
He's right, though. Watching a movie on your phone, I guess the way you described it is better. It's really when it's like a cinematic film.
Because
I don't think there's anything wrong with watching a TV show on your phone.
No, if it's like just a lot of talking and stuff.
Yeah.
Or comedy. Like, I could watch Always Sunny in Philadelphia or something on a phone.
Even with films, I could watch the movie Knocked Up.
Yeah.
I could watch that comedy.
Yeah.
I could watch Superbad
like
on my
Clerks
phone.
Or something.
Yeah. You know,
it's more about funny dialogue. Yeah.
But if I'm watching Taxi Driver, that belongs on a big screen with
all
the lights off.
I'd love to see that on the big screen.
Oh.
Speaking of that, there's a revival going on in Bertrand now at the Imagine Theater a couple weeks ago. I went and saw Enter the Dragon on the big screen.
Yeah.
And it was amazing, man. Like, the sound was just, it brought it to life. It felt like the first time I ever watched it, because there was just, like, so much bass that I, like, wow. Just so much power in that movie. You can imagine what Bruce Lee would have did if he didn't die. You know, like, his next film would have been the shit.
So, speaking on the movie theater thing, I realized that a lot of these theaters are doing this now, where it's called, like, flashback cinema or throwback.
And that's what it is. Yeah.
Showings on certain days, and it'll be like each, I think it's like at least at Imagine where you went, right? It's Wednesdays and Mondays, I want to say.
We went on Sunday, so it might be Sundays.
So Sundays and Wednesdays, I think it is then, because I'm pretty sure the other one's Wednesday. And you just have to go at the right time. I think there's maybe two or three showings throughout the day, and it's always a different movie for each, I want to say day, but it might be week. And they just do a few throughout the month. You can see the list online.
Yeah.
And that would be so dope, man. There's so many times I've wanted to go and I just didn't line it up, because they have a lot of good ones going on in there.
Like, the next one I want to see is Back to the Future, the original.
Imagine seeing that in
see
theaters.
That, on the big screen, man. Oh. I can't wait. It's in this June, so I'm going to go check that out. And I think like Jaws is showing this summer, and Wizard of Oz. They got like some pretty cool stuff.
Wizard of Oz?
Yeah, you know, get blazed out and go see Wizard of Oz. That'd be the shit.
Oh, dude, that would be the shit. That's unbeatable.
Yeah. I'm actually going to a festival tomorrow down at Yipsy, Spark in the Park, and Be Real from Cypress Hill is going to be there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm pretty excited for that, man. Yeah.
And we're time traveling, so this is actually, you did this in the past.
This is in the past now.
Yeah,
you got to time travel back with us. But I'm going with my crew, Midnight Roots, which is the company I work for. They do medicated candy bars and such. It's my friend's company, so I'm going in there with them, man. So big shouts out to Midnight Roots.
What kind of candy bars?
The medicated kind. We've got 12 different flavors.
But I mean, like, what if somebody was interested in getting them, like, is it, like, a sucker? Is it like a lollipop? Like
actual kind of candy? Candy bars, chocolate candy, yeah.
Oh, chocolate candy.
Yeah, yep, chocolate candy bars, kind of the size of a Hershey bar.
And you were about to say the dosage?
200 milligrams each.
For the whole bar?
For the whole bar.
Let's go.
And then the new thing we got with these things called full moons, and they're 200 milligram little bites. You know, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, we're going down there to Spark.
Those sound dangerous.
Yeah, very dangerous. Got to be careful, you know. Parental advisory here, you know.
Be careful, folks.
Be careful, yeah. It's not for the faint of heart.
Kids, don't try this at home.
Kids, leave it alone.
But Spark in the Park, in the Park. Oh, and you know what I wanted to ask you, too, when you mentioned it earlier, is, well, there's two things. There's two things we got to touch on before you get out of here that I know we got to bring back up. So the first one will be this. When it comes to record swaps and those types of things.
Yep.
How do those conventionally, like, have you done those before? How do those usually go? Is it a nice community that people could expect? Like, would you expect to meet some other people that also are good, they're collectors just like you? Yeah. Like, what kind of people would people, what kind of thing could a record collector expect if they've never been to this type of event before?
It's basically, it is a community. Just like everything else, there's a community of vinyl lovers, and they go to conventions and all know each other. All the local stores are going to be represented at the record swap. The last one I did at the local, I've actually, I think this is probably the third or fourth record swap I've done at the local. I've done them at different flea markets and garage sales too, where I've done kind of pop-ups with Gaza's Records, which is my kind of setup. But the local 432, that's the place where I like to do it, man. It's a good spot. Shouts out to Joel Rash and the local staff, you know, all good people for giving me the opportunity. But basically, I reached out to all the local record stores, and I frequent all these stores, you know, and I buy vinyl from these cats, and they know I love vinyl. And when they come across like Michigan Hip Hop, they'll hit me up, like, you know, Jack's Record Stash and Mike over at Electric Crown and Eric over at Media Reload, you know, all those guys, you know, they're all down, and they'll come and set up tables at the record swap too. And then my brother Ryan, who runs a store out in Clio, Michigan, Collectibles Unlimited, he's got a nice vinyl section. He's a vinyl head too, so he'll come out there and set up a table. And then also, I extend the invitation out to the entire community. If there's any cats out there that just want to bring a table and set up vinyls, it's free to set up, you know, and cats can just come there, can trade vinyl, sell vinyl, shop for vinyl, do whatever you want, you know what I mean? It's pretty cool, man. There's a nice space. We've got some good music jamming. Downtown's right in walking distance. You can go over to the, you know, the local bars and restaurants if you need to. It's really cool, man. It really does feel like a community of vinyl lovers and, you know, vinyl addicts, that all these guys that are just like crazy for records and always set up at the conventions. And I've set up at a convention in Bay City before and had a lot of success. And I'm gonna basically do that. I'm even gonna reach out to like record stores in different areas and try to get them to come to the swap. Last time my man Drew, he's got a shop down in Detroit, the 37th Shield Library, and he came up and sold a bunch of stuff and brought some great hip hop, and it was really successful. The last record swap I did a fall one last year, and it was very successful, man. Much love to everybody that came out. And the one that's going on today, in the future, follow me, in the future, this is going on today. There's going to be a lot of good vinyl here, and, you know, it's definitely going to be worth checking out. A lot of genres, probably even going to be some CDs, tapes, and some movies, you know.
Yeah.
Yep, I always got some movies for sale too, man. So I'm always wheeling and dealing and flipping movies, you know.
When we step out of the time machine and in its reality, I won't be able to make it to this event.
I know. You're gonna
because
be in
I will be in Chicago.
That's cool, though.
And it's sad because what you just said to me is I don't have a record player, but I could get some movies.
Yeah,
but I won't be able to get them from you. I'm sure I'll find a cool little movie shop there.
You can get some secondhand movies now, pretty cheap.
Gramophone. You told me about that.
Check that out. Yeah, that's a great place in Chicago. Great
for vinyl.
For vinyl, CDs. They probably got, you know, they might even have movies there, possibly. Ooh. I don't think so, though, but it's mainly records.
And then the other thing I was going to ask you, you said we could circle back to it. Uh-huh. I made sure to keep this tab.
Okay.
Detroit Album of the Year?
Yeah, Detroit Album of the Year. Yeah, we it was 2002, 2003. I think it was like right January, I think, right in the middle of those. It just turned 2003, and we had released the album a couple months prior. We were really proud of this album. We put a lot of work into it. We got Juice from Chicago. That's the track that we got all the Chicago MCs on, too. That Shove song was on Second Wind. And we even got Killer Priest, who is an affiliate of the Wu-Tang Clan. We got him on the album, which was a pretty big deal for us. And we had another song with O-Type Star and Invincible, a real dope Detroit MC. She's done a lot of good work, too. So basically, we had this excellent album with a lot of original tracks, some great collabos, and we pushed it hard that year. We did a lot of touring in the Detroit area, and we just won over the fans. And when that award show came, we were invited to perform at it, and we didn't expect to win this shit. We were the only Flint group in the building. You know, everybody's from Detroit. And when they announced us Album of the Year's winners, man, it was just, like, amazing. Like, wow. And that album did really good for us, man, you know. And Artful Dodgers was really going strong at that time. A couple years later, no, actually 1 year later, in 2004, we did the Vans Warped Tour as Artful Dodgers and played the Code of the Cut stage along with Nonfiction, Lords of the Brooklyn, and a bunch of dope cats. And, you know, that album did a lot of good work for us, man. It was at this place called The Motor. It used to be called The Falcon, but at the time we played there, it was called The Motor. And it was a great event, man. We got to perform, we got to mingle and network with all these dope Detroit MCs. And, you know, it was an honor, man, to be part of history and win that award. That site's still going. It's a strong supporter of, you know, the Michigan scene. And we had some great times back then, man. Yeah, album of the year. It was dope. Yeah. I'm hoping to get another one of those one of these days. You know, I'm always on, you know, working on some new albums and working on some new music, you know, constantly.
So that's one of your biggest successes. And I like to wrap these things up with a bow. So nice. Let's get inspirational for them. Let's talk about, throughout your career, what do you think are some of the moments that you've learned the most from? What's some information that you could give to people from those moments, some lessons that you've learned along the way?
Some of the lessons I learned is just to get out of the house. You know what I'm saying? You can't sit by the phone and wait for this call or even, you know, record a song and put it on the internet and just hope people find it. You know, it's like you really got to get out and, you know, network with people, go to shows, make connections with other artists that you're feeling, you know, go to open mics, get into ciphers, get into a sidewalk cipher with some other MCs after a rap show, you know what I mean? And just, you know, listen to music. You know, a big part of me, especially if, like, for producers, listen to music. You know, get a little record player and dig in the crates. Get your fingers dusty. Go to the dollar bin at these record stores. You know what I'm saying? You ain't got to spend the top-of-the-line $50 reprint money. Go to that dollar bin and see what you can find, man. You'll find some cool sounds from way back. You can flip it, take it out of context, and make something brand new and incredible out of it. And that's, like, that's my style of production, man. You'll never see me using these Puff Daddy style loops where it's like I'm a sample hit to make a hit. You know what I mean? Never. I don't want anyone to recognize none of the sounds that I'm using. I'm getting these from artists that didn't have careers much, you know, much beyond one album, people that existed 50, 60 years ago, you know what I mean? Like, just, that's my style, is to get some grimy sounds like that and then flip it and make it new with some, you know, new school hard drums and bass, you know, because I'm definitely all about the bass. Ooh, and that's another thing I should bring up. I'm working on a bass album, too, with my man DJ Virus. It's kind of going to be a throwback to, like, the bass tapes of the back in the day, like DJ Magic Mike and, you know, stuff like that. And it's just going to be, like, true earth-moving, you know, music that's going to, like, shake the speakers and really hit hard, you know?
Ooh. So if you hear that one bumping down the street, you might know who did it.
Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure. Yeah, so expect that too, man. And my advice is to get out there, you know, be yourself. Don't try to sound like the next man, because these trends that, you know, get popular aren't going to last forever. They're eventually going to fade away. And if you come up with something original that's all yours, you know, it could pop off at any time for you, you know, because you're doing your own thing. And it's like, I'm huge on originality and coming up with your own sound and your own, expressing your own story, you know, and showing your own character. And, you know, that's a big part of hip hop, and everything is having good character too, you know, even with skills and stuff. You gotta be a good character, relatable, and, like, you know, speak the truth of your life and, you know, express your, you know, experiences, you know, through your music and everything. And I really feel that way, man. Music to me is like therapy. You know, it really is. I feel like after I get done recording a verse on a song, I feel like just a weight has lifted off of me. You know what I mean? It almost exhausts me when I do a song. I don't know if you feel that way, but, like, if I record a whole song in one studio session, I will literally be exhausted. And it's a great feeling, though, because you're, like, getting all that, you know, frustration and stress out in that moment, man. It's beautiful. It's the best therapy.
I feel that even more so when in a great recording session, but even more so when I perform.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
I mean, even when I record some of these videos for social media, because I do just as much as I would do in a regular performance, so I go all in.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'll catch myself like, whew.
Yeah, like, for
calming
sure.
myself down afterwards. Cause
that's good, man. You got the passion in you.
Yeah, because I feel it. It's something that you feel.
It is, man. Yeah. It really is. I can tell, man. It's in you, too, just like it's in me. We're creatives, you know what I'm saying? We're going to make movies. We're going to make music. We're going to fucking...
Well, there's a release within that,
Yeah,
though.
There is, man. That's who we are. I think that's what we're always going to be. Another, you know, you talked about Joey Koff being here. That, you know, he's a cool cat. I've done some stuff with him, and he's the same way, too. I've told him that. It's who he is. He's an MC. He's an artist, songwriter.
He's just a creative person.
He is. He's a creative person like us. He's always going to be. Yeah. It's like some cats, they want to do music to get popular, or girls or money or whatever, and it's kind of like a hobby. It ain't a hobby to us.
Yeah,
it's a lifestyle.
You know
for us.
What? One of the best compliments I've ever gotten, someone said to me that I'm truly an artist. Like they were saying, and they meant it in a great way. Like they had a couple other things they said around it, but what they were saying was that like I'm not doing it for the sake of satisfying anything.
Right.
That's basically what they're saying. Like I'm an artist in the sense that I'm truly making it for the sake of creation.
Yeah.
And I think that's even what this is,
it
this
is.
Podcast.
Yes.
I don't come in and expect you to give me some juicy details. I just expect us to have a great conversation. And look at that. It happened. It happens every time.
Exactly. It's natural,
and
man.
And I think that people just, you know, as long as you put yourself aside and just allow things to happen and just happen as they are, that's when those things do happen for you.
Definitely.
And the other thing I wanted to say about timelessness and about what you were saying is that I think that what it truly is that when you learn to be more, how do I phrase this? So I think that the only way that you could possibly go beyond whatever the present moment is to truly have a principled stance in however you feel about things.
Yeah.
And sure, that's going to waver, and you have to accept that you're never going to be the same thing throughout all time. But as long as you carry principles, then those things are what make you timeless.
Yes.
Because timeless knows not what time is.
Yeah, no doubt, man.
And with that, folks, I think that's about all. Where would people find you on social media?
BGoza.com is my website. And, you know, check me out on there. It's got links to all my social media, BGOZZA.com. And I'm on all, you know, social media as BGoza or Gaza. You know, you can find me either way that way. And, you know, hit me up. Check out the website. There's some free music on there. You can check out all my albums, all my music videos. You know, and everything. Much love to everybody out there. Thanks for watching. Much love for you. Keep up the good work, my brother. Good luck in Chicago. I'm going to come down there and visit you for sure.
Oh, we'll have you back on the show real soon,
definitely.
My
friend. We're going to do the movie episode for sure.
I'm looking forward to
it. Me too, man. Me too.
I believe you.
Yeah.
We are going to do it.
Definitely.
Thank you for being here. Thank you guys for watching. You watch this whole thing. You're awesome. You're crazy. Go outside. Yeah. Touch grass. Go do something even cooler than what we just did.
No doubt.
Go make magic, people. Yeah. I'm telling you, art is a beautiful thing, and we all got superpowers. All right. Ruse Radio. Clocking out.
Yeah.